Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Hello and welcome to Education, Technology, Society. This is a podcast where we think about all things to do with education, technology, digital education, but from a slightly more critical perspective than is usually the case. Today we're talking about facial recognition technology in education. And this spins off a story in Inside Higher Education, February the 27th, which described how professors in the US were beginning to bring facial recognition into their classes to measure attendance, measure students' concentration, and perhaps even measure learning. Now, this sparked off a whole furore online, a whole bunch of folk piled in, including Charles Logan from Northwestern University. So in this podcast, I caught up with Charles to talk through some of the issues that he can see with facial recognition coming into classrooms, where he sees it going, and the problems that he thinks this technology may pose for students, educators, and the future of education. We had a great conversation. We touched on a whole bunch of issues around surveillance, AI, algorithms in classrooms, and it just shows how complex the whole issues around AI and technology in education actually are. Enjoy. I mean, this Inside Higher Education story triggered off this slight furore over facial recognition. What was the story actually about? Can you just in a nutshell explain to us or remind people?
Yeah, so the antagonist of the story, if I can put it that way, was a faculty member at a liberal arts college, I think in the Northeast in the United States, and was developing a facial recognition system for his classroom. I don't believe he had deployed it yet, and I don't know if the blowback from the article will embolden him or maybe have him pause a bit to consider the ramifications of the technology. But I think the sort of rationale for the technology that he presented was three different things, as I understood it. One was to document his students' behavior in the class, and attention in particular, and where that attention was wandering or where it was perhaps more focused. And then also their emotional states, and being able to detect those emotional states as well as potentially detect learning. But I think the thing that really set folks off and set me off was the seemingly open embrace of what I view as a deeply harmful technology. And so the article sort of unpacked those arms and also gave the faculty member a chance to sort of elaborate a little bit. And other sort of folks in the computer science engineering world who sort of weighed in about the technology and its use, particularly in schools.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to point out, I think this was a computer science professor that was sort of almost building these tools for himself. And within the computer science community and the engineering community, one of the class projects that they often set students is develop a very simple facial recognition system for your class to take attendance. And I think that was one of the things he was also saying at a low level this technology would do. So I guess it's interesting for more critically minded folk to kind of disentangle this whole creep of facial recognition technology into classrooms. It's interesting to start off with this attendance usage. I mean, in theory, that's a very benign use of the technology. So, I mean, would you have a problem with just, you know, using facial recognition merely to take the class register to see which students have turned up?
Yes, because I don't think it stops there. I think that it's a Trojan horse for getting the technology into schools, that's whether it's K-12 or in higher education. And so I think the argument that it's a benign technology, I mean, as you just said, these technologies have a kind of function creep that, sure, you could use it for attendance, you could use it for other seemingly benign purposes, but these are very powerful technologies, and I think they encourage those who control the technologies to use their power in ways that harm particularly minoritized and marginalized students and families. So ban facial recognition technology in schools and in higher ed, full stop.
Right. Well, we will get to that point by going through some of these other uses as well. I would just say, I mean, I've done a little bit of research on facial recognition attendance technologies myself. It's really interesting. The industry will claim that it saves hours of teacher time. You no longer have to do the manual register. Even when we've spoken to teachers about a really benign use of the technology such as that, they've actually said, well, taking the attendance is a real generative pedagogical act. It's a sense of when you're a teacher, you can actually make a human connection with students at the beginning of the day. You can check in on their mental state. You can check in on, just address them as it's a relational thing. And actually, even something like that is a really, really important task that teachers want to carry out themselves. So there's this idea that, you know, we can solve problems and create efficiencies, and some of the stuff that's been solved is actually really useful. But I mean, okay, we can argue about the attendance thing, but you also talked about this idea of checking in on students' emotional states or their mental, how they're feeling, how they're engaged, how they're concentrating.
Yeah.
Now, this is a really interesting example of the technology. As you said, this is speculative technology. So, I mean, I'm just interested to unpack this about the promises being made here and also the real harms that people like you are raising.
Yeah, I mean, I think speculative is certainly a way to think about it. I think pseudoscience is another way to think about it. And I think, right, that the way that these technologies are working is through measurement of distances on human faces. And to think that those are emotions, to me, is a misstep, is a misunderstanding of the deep complexity and ultimately, you know, unknowability of human emotion that differs from culture to culture. And so I think there's a flattening of emotion into what can be quantified and then automated. And as a former high school English teacher, you know, I very much resonate with that point of, you know, here we are taking attendance, or here we are, you know, just walking around our classroom, and I don't need an automated system to tell me what my students are feeling, because one, I don't think it can, and two, it de-skills me as a educator, and it calls into question my own humanity, let alone the student's humanity. So the notion that these technologies can read emotion and that that information is somehow useful for teachers, again, I think ultimately positions teachers and students in various sort of dim lights in terms of their own complexity and trust that they build with one another, and that these systems, I think, disrupt and really are deeply harmful.
It's interesting, though, that you position yourself as an ex-English high school teacher, English teacher. I mean, if you're a computer science professor with a big class of 500 students in front of you, it's quite tempting to have something which can just have a very, very rough sense check of, you know, it's not accurate, as you say, it's not even a kind of truthful representation, but it's better than nothing. And I guess they would argue that, you know, these technologies fulfill a kind of a function for that sort of context. I guess the mission creep is when that logic then gets put into small schools with younger students. And as you say, it's very, very different context, isn't it? But can you see the appeal from a kind of, you know, a university perspective?
I do. And I think that's an indictment of the institutions and, you know, the ways in which higher ed is trying to squeeze more and more out of faculty, let alone communities of adjunct workers and faculty. And, you know, so I think, of course, these technologies that are promising efficiency are attractive to a neoliberal institution. And as a faculty member, if I have 500 students that I have to account for, then there's a great appeal for these technologies. And I think that is a failure on the institutional part not to support that teacher. And so I don't want to throw teachers under the bus, though they do bear responsibility for sort of buying into these systems. And so I think, you know, there are sort of multiple scales at which we need to question these technologies and then work with folks to improve their labor conditions such that these technologies are not appealing.
I mean, you could argue teachers are not buying into this. It's the institutions that are buying into it, and it's being imposed on teachers. I mean, that's another level of complexity. The killer kind of claim for the technology in this particular story was perhaps the chance that this technology could measure learning, which I guess is of great appeal to all sorts of people. So, I mean, we've already gone through the problems with attendance and emotion. I mean, what issues are there if we start using facial recognition as a kind of proxy measure for learning?
I think the verb that was used was detect learning, right? I think we're detecting compliance. I think we're, you know, detecting how well you can behave in normative ways that often align with white middle class culture and expectation about what it looks like to be a student, what it looks like to do school. And I think students are savvy enough where they could play that game, and they are learning. They're learning important lessons about, you know, how to resist and refuse, which is, you know, a line of research that I'm really interested in. But if you know, the illusion that you could just set up cameras and out comes a kind of number that, you know, students have learned 80% of your lesson, or, you know, I don't know what the interfaces look like for these technologies, or, you know, maybe a student is assigned green if they've learned a lot and, you know, red if they haven't learned a lot. But again, I think it is a very sort of shallow view of learning by what can just be detected from a camera lens. And so, again, that would be another point of pushback that I would have.
Yeah, and students will very quickly work out how to look like they're learning and contort their face or speak in ways that will trigger off the algorithm. Now, in your pushback on social media, you were using some quite strong language. I think some advocates of the technology would talk about. I mean, we were talking about policing pedagogy. This technology is cop shit, which is language that's used by critical education technology folk quite a lot. But it really triggers off education technology proponents. And I'm just interested in this idea about, you know, policing and surveillance and all of these kind of these emotive words. So, I mean, can you just unpack some of the kind of criticisms that you'd have there about the conditions that this sort of technology might bring into classrooms?
Yeah. So I think facial recognition technologies are being introduced into school systems that for many years have been about control and coercion, particularly around minoritized students and minoritized bodies. And so I think there's sort of an unfortunate sort of natural fit for these technologies and the infrastructures and sort of the ideologies behind them. But it's important to recognize that these technologies are inviting a kind of deepening of the authoritarian state. And that is especially true in the United States, where we see increased anti-trans laws and increased sort of rejection of grappling with the violence of U.S. history and of colonialism. So I think it's important to recognize these technologies as cop shit, as Jeffrey Morrow sort of coined that term a few years ago, but that these technologies, again, in sort of the guise of real-time feedback, actionable data, have encoded in them these pedagogies of control, of punishment. And even, you know, I think well-meaning teachers who would sort of balk at, rightfully so, by some guy, me, being like, you're using cop shit in your classroom. But I think these technologies, they bend pedagogy, they bend teachers into sort of viewing their students as people to be controlled, as people to be monitored, surveilled, and punished ultimately. And we see that in other kinds of technologies like Gaggle or Go Guardian, these student monitoring softwares that a bunch of reports have come out in recent years that these technologies are sold to protect and, you know, secure students, classrooms, teachers, much like facial recognition, right, is sold as sort of a security measure. But what ends up happening is teachers use these tools as means of sort of punishment and of finding moments when the student was supposed to be working on a project, they were watching a YouTube video. And then we see that, you know, mounting evidence that these sorts of technologies can strengthen the school-to-prison pipeline. So that's what I mean by cop shit. I think it is often kind of hidden behind and these claims about security, about safety, as much as sort of like militarization is, right? That it's about safety. We're protecting you. It's for your own good. But in fact, it is another means for those with power to exercise that power against those who have the least amount of power and the least amount of agency.
Mm. I mean, it's also interesting in education and healthcare how the language of care is often operationalized as well, the flip side of safety.
Yeah.
So you mentioned at the beginning that we should outright ban this technology in schools. To play devil's advocate, when you talk to people in the industry, they'll say, but there are surely instances of facial recognition where it is completely for good. So when you talk to people outside of education, they'll say, well, you know, if a child gets abducted, surely you want to be able to find that missing child. And in education, I have seen the example of why can we not have this technology just to allow visually impaired students to recognize who else is in the room? Surely that's fine. We use this technology to unlock our smartphones now. We use this technology. So can you see any cases or spaces where this technology should be in? Or are you advocating a blanket ban from?
Yeah. I mean, I know I came out hard against the technology earlier. I mean, I think a big piece of that is who decides how the technology is used. So in the case of a disabled person or a disabled student, is that the student's choice? What kind of community decision-making process is put in place? So to me, part of it is the process. And so, you know, I suppose in the case of a disabled student, then I would need to know more. But for me, it is, I think, also that decision-making process, which often, right, these technologies sort of appear one day or like they're installed over the summer and all of a sudden we have, you know, constant monitoring that no one signed up for. So yeah, I mean, let me nuance my position a little bit, I suppose. But I mean, again, my worry would be, okay, as a school, we've invested so much money into this technology. Now we're gonna get our money's worth. And so, you know, the companies themselves who are sort of pushing other capacities, right, of the technology. So that, I guess that would be my attempt to nuance my binary position a little bit.
It's really tricky. And I mean, it's... My worry is, I mean, I'd start off from the blanket ban position, but this technology is already here. It's not going to go away. So it's also interesting to think about how we can live with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's Luke Stark saying it, instead of a complete ban, we should treat it like plutonium, and it should be heavily, heavily, heavily regulated.
Yeah.
And every one instance of it should be scrutinized, as you just said. So I think possibly that's a way forward.
Yeah.
And it's also really interesting to think about how the technology can be used by those with less power, as you say. There was all these examples in the Seattle protests, for example, of protesters using facial recognition to identify cops that had ripped off their ID badges. So it's a fascinating tech. And that brings me on to something you mentioned earlier about using schools as a place to foster critical awareness, maybe resistance, maybe kind of imaginative reuse. So, I mean, I'm really interested how you can see that playing out. Do you think schools could be a place where students learn to live with, work around, resist this technology? And if so, how do we do that?
And I have been thinking a lot about the Luddites recently and writing about the Luddites. And what you're talking about is a Luddite praxis. And so in trying to sort of theorize what that might look like, I mean, I think it looks like teachers and students and community members learning about the technology rather than just sort of having it passively, you know, in the background. I think it requires sort of rethinking what technology education looks like in schools, you know, from pre-service education through, you know, current teachers in the classroom. And I think it does require sort of that spirit of bottom-up, playful, you know, sporadic resistance and refusal. And what that looks like is different for every school. And acknowledging too that requires an acceptance of risk, right? If I'm a teacher, if I'm a student, and I'm, you know, trying to not advocating necessarily for going and taking a hammer Luddite style to an expensive video camera in your hallway, because also, you know, you can break the infrastructure, but the cloud is such that, you know, that data still exists and there is a sort of a limitation to a Luddite praxis as well. But I think a theme of our conversation that I'm holding on to is the importance of those relationships between teachers and students, between teachers and teachers, between teachers and administrators and the larger community, and how these technologies pit people against people. And they I think are fundamentally distrusting, and their gaze is one of criminalization. It's not a gaze of compassion.
I guess my final question is, where do you think this is all going? As you said, this professor who wrote this story hadn't actually built this tech yet, was just thinking about it. He might get pushback. A lot of ed tech hype never really comes to fruition. So where do you fear or see this actually panning out in, say, 10 years' time? Are we going to have classrooms stuffed full of facial recognition, or is it going to be something that's just died away?
I don't know. You know, I'm thinking about this conversation sort of in the broader context of ethical debates around AI and ethical debates around technology sort of writ large. I do think there's a kind of renewed vigor to that conversation. So it's a story that I'd like to think is you know, there's not a conclusion. And it's certainly, I think that young people, I've seen, you know, these flashes of protests, of anger around whether it's facial recognition technology or different algorithms. And so I think there is a kind of spirit of protest that I hope that as education researchers, as educators, that that spirit, that we keep that flame alive. And that is going to be really important, whether it's facial recognition technology or generative AI.
Yeah, this stuff is not going to go away in one form or the other. Well, thanks ever so much for taking the time, Charles. It's really, really interesting. I'm really glad that you did kind of arc up against this story, because it does unpack a much, much broader range of issues that we definitely need to keep talking about. So good luck.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.